out in the country where a woman's called a gal. She's more than a lover, she's a farmer's best pal. We marry them for life, we marry with a vow. And even in the night we know how to plow. Our children have two parents, our children have a home. They don't grow up with no edible syndrome. We're the backbone of this country, the spirit of its soul. Best you ask for whom the bell tolls. We feed you. We feed you. We feed you.
Hello, everybody. I'm Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission. Here we are at episode 13 of Wait All About It, or what I'm calling Falling Numbers 102. For those who didn't listen to episode 12, Falling Numbers 101, this is a continuation of a discussion organized by the Washington Grain Commission that was held during Spokane Ag Expo in February. With Grain Commission Chairman Mike Miller moderating, Ty Jessup, grain merchandiser for Central Washington Grain Growers, Don Potts, regional manager of Washington State's Grain Inspection Program, and Aaron Carter, WSU's winter wheat breeder, spoke about falling numbers from the viewpoint of each of their specialties. Jessup looked at the market, Potts the inspection component, and Carter the science. I included portions of Jessup's and Potts' presentation in episode 12. Rather than shoehorn everyone into a single episode, I'm giving Dr. Carter free rein in Falling Numbers 102, episode 13, with a lead-in from the WGC's Miller. But allow me to digress for a moment and say that I believe spending an extended period of time with Dr. Carter has given me insight into his teaching style, which is clear, straightforward, and well-organized. I also like the fact he's willing to admit there's still a lot to learn about the phenomenon that affects falling numbers. I urge you to listen to this podcast when you can really listen. Think of it as going back to school. Dr. Carter refers to the slides of his PowerPoint presentation. I have posted those on our Facebook page. Search for Wheat All About It. I'm also posting the first story I wrote about late maturity alpha amylase. That was back in Wheat Life in 2011. Dr. Carter remarked several times in his presentation that the research he and other scientists are pursuing at Washington State University and the Agricultural Research Service has largely been driven by the efforts of the Washington Grain Commission and funded by the assessments growers and landlords provide to the organization. For those who want a refresher on the fallout from low falling numbers in the marketing and inspection worlds, I urge you to listen to episode 12. Without that primer, you might be lost here. For further background, go to the second half of episode 11. There, I interviewed Camille Stieber, the ARS scientist working on falling numbers research. Mike Miller, chairman of Washington Grain Commission, has been among the leaders of a Pacific Northwest effort to establish a long-term quality-based research program that will address the falling numbers issue. Washington, Oregon, and Idaho are all backing the effort to seek additional funding to address the issue through the Agricultural Research Service. A separate but equally important approach seeks federal grants specifically developed to find falling number solutions. Miller told an audience of farmers, their wives, and agribusiness representatives where we were and where we are now.
It started a while back. We were sitting at a Grain Commission meeting, and Kevin Whitehall, who was then at that point in time up at Central Washington Grain Growers, brought this to our attention, as well did a guy from Idaho, Joe Anderson. And falling numbers was starting to become a little bit more of a talking point then. It was starting to hit in some fewer areas, but the numbers were more drastic. So that's when the Grain Commission started to try to say, is this something that we need to explore? And when you start a huge problem, you have to be ready for the answers, and we posed more questions than the answers were coming. So we've invested a lot of money into this over these 4 years, and we're investing more. We've brought in a lot of national attention. The Grain Commission was just back in Washington, D.C. last week. We had an opportunity, along with the other two states, PNW, to go to USDA, ARS, and meet with the powers that be, We pleaded our case. We're very professional about it, of what we directly want to ask for. And to bring them in to, from the scientific world nationally, was a pretty big effort. We hope that it pays off. We'll know here probably in a couple of months.
I'm devoting the rest of the podcast to Dr. Carter's presentation. But remember, he spoke for more than 35 minutes, and there's only a bit more than 20 minutes here. If some of his transitions sound a bit abrupt, it's not him, it's my editing. He began his presentation by laying out the reasons for low falling numbers that we know of.
There's two causes that we know of low falling number, and that's the pre-harvest sprout and late maturity alpha amylase. And I've stolen a lot of these slides from Camille. As she puts it, it's like apples and oranges. They really aren't similar. Pre-harvest sprouting is the germination of mature grains, usually caused by cool, rainy conditions at harvest. LMA is caused by that induced cold or heat shock during maturation of the grain. One thing that she taught me actually this year was pre-harvest sprouting. You know, most of the times when I thought about pre-harvest sprouting, I was thinking a rain event at harvest maturity, when we're out there actually about ready to harvest. It rains a day or two before, and that's pre-harvest sprouting. Well, pre-harvest sprouting can actually occur even before that harvest ready. So usually once your peduncles are starting to turn, or the grain starting to turn, that actually, the grain itself is mature. And after that, we just start losing moisture and drying it down. So pre-harvest sprouting can actually occur 5 to 6 weeks before we would think mature grain harvest ready, which was something I wasn't aware of. And in our conversations, she was able to teach me about. A lot of the alpha amylase activity actually occurs in the seed coat and around the aluron layer. And then, of course, in the endosperm is where you have all the carbohydrates that alpha amylase works on to break down into the sugars. And this is just kind of the science behind why we're looking at that gravy versus watery. You have these long starch chains. The longer the starch chains, the more that flour gels and becomes that gravy mixture thick. Alpha amylase cuts those strands up into smaller strands. And so when you get that temperature in your solution, it doesn't gel up, and you're left with more of a watery solution. So that's just kind of what alpha amylase is doing, and why when we look at it from the science standpoint of low falling number, it all has to do with that alpha amylase activity. The more amylase activity you have, the more starch chains get cut up into smaller pieces. The more smaller pieces, the more watery your solution is going to be upon heating. Looking at why is this number 300 so important, Ty talked about it from an export standpoint. This is what it looks like from a quality standpoint as far as when that alpha amylase actually occurs. So I think, can you see? Oh, no, I was curious if my arrow would show up. So here's the alpha amylase activity at about 0.1, and you see it's nearly vertical right there. So when you go from about 300 up, they add samples even up to 800, there's no alpha amylase activity that we can detect different between an 800 sample and a 300 sample. But as soon as you start getting numbers below 300, you can start seeing the curve coming out, and we start getting that alpha amylase activity. So again, from that end-use quality perspective, it truly is when grains get below a 300 falling number, we can start detecting alpha amylase activity. And then that alpha amylase activity then goes into the quality of the products that are occurring. It's a different view on why 300 is important, more from the quality aspect, because that's where that inflection and curve starts to take, and activity is actually being able to be seen. For our export markets, Japanese sponge cakes are one of the things that are pictured here that we look at for quality. And actually, when we send grain over to those export countries, they run the Japanese sponge cake to kind of get an estimate of that. And again, starting at the top on your side left, with high falling numbers, you get very good quality of your sponge cakes. And as you start to decrease the falling number increase the amylase activity in there. You start seeing that dipping of the sponge cake, and eventually you get to a crumb grain that's very bad. A little bit of activity is actually okay. It can handle a little bit. You kind of saw that picture. The 250 loaf looked fairly good, and when you got up to the 400, it wasn't as good. It enhances fermentation on the bread. But once you start getting into moderate amounts of it, it's a very sticky bread. It won't slice very well. And then when you get highly sprouted wheat, you really lose the ability of that to rise. There's just nothing left, that no structure left in that. But again, the majority of our products are not going to make breads. And so although you've probably seen this before and thought, well, a 250 doesn't look too bad. Well, 250, you know, we're not making breads with our soft whites. So, but just a little bit there. Looking at, you know, I talked about grain maturation. So this is kind of that process as we start through with embryo development, going into a watery stage, milky stage, soft dough, hard dough, and then ripe for harvest. So this is kind of what pre-harvest sprouting looks like. It's not until we get down here into this stage where we're actually going to see pre-harvest sprouting occur. So those rain events, when our grain is mature and starting to dry down, that's when pre-harvest sprouting is going to occur. Whereas when you look at late maturity alpha amylase, that really occurs there about 25 to 30 days after anthesis, when your grain is still maturing on the plant. So just kind of the difference. So again, you know, we have two stages where this can occur. Pre-harvest sprouting is more at the mature grain stage, whereas late maturity alpha amylase is more at grain development and pre-maturation. So part of the reason why the events that can cause low falling number can be extended as well. You know, it's not just one day of the year when you're going to have this happen. It could potentially be a 3-week period where your crop might be vulnerable to a late maturity alpha amylase or a pre-harvest sprouting event. So just kind of what have we done in response with this? And a lot of this actually came in conversations with the Washington Grain Commission in response from them. So we've been working on this since 2013 and in discussions actually before that. I know in 2011 and 2012, when Brill started showing some issues, you know, we started having these conversations. Is this a variety issue? Is it just a year issue? And in 2013, I think the Grain Commission really said, okay, we want WSU and the USDA to look at this and start figuring out what's going on. So what has happened with that money that we have got from the Grain Commission, actually as growers, your money. So we've studied LMA and pre-harvest sprouting since 2013, and mainly using the WSU variety testing trial. So we're able to source that grain, we're able to get samples of that, and we're able to run the falling number on that. We've also gone into those trials, and we're able to, in some cases, induce pre-harvest sprouting. So in areas where we had irrigation, we were able to put some irrigation on there and try and induce that. We're also, and I'll show you in a slide in a minute, we're also able to induce late maturity alpha amylase under growth chamber conditions as well. So we're able to take these variety testing trials and have started to collect a lot of data on the falling number, but not only on the falling number, but whether that was caused by pre-harvest sprouting or whether that was caused by late maturity alpha amylase, because there's, I think, some different risk options in there if growers know a variety is susceptible to one or the other. So we've got all that falling number data is published on a website, which I'll show you later. We've also run the spike wetting test for pre-harvest sprouting and falling number on 480 lines in a Pacific Northwest diversity panel. So what we did is pretty much collected 480 lines that are grown in the Pacific Northwest that date back about 70 years, release varieties, breeding lines that never made it to varieties, and started looking at this. The Grain Commission actually started this in 2013 with their funding, and with some of that preliminary data, we were actually able to get a USDA NIFA grant that now funds the graduate students that are working on this. So it started out as the Grain Commission, transitioned to some USDA funding. And really the purpose of that USDA funding is to look at the genetics. What is actually causing pre-harvest sprouting and late maturity alpha amylase on the genetic side of it to see if we can't find ways to better screen our material. So a lot that we have been doing on that, and again, definitely in collaboration with the Grain Commission and their funding on that. So just looking a little bit about what we know about late maturity alpha amylase and pre-harvest sprouting on the genetic side. Where pre-harvest sprouting is controlled by grain dormancy, late maturity alpha amylase is not. And you heard Don talk about that. He said this was one of the first years where we actually saw hard red varieties that were coming in with low falling numbers. Almost in all those cases, it's because of late maturity alpha amylase. Because most of those red varieties have a grain dormancy that somewhat protects them from a pre-harvest sprout event. This is how we do the LMA induction. We'll do this on plants both grown in the greenhouse and from the field. So we'll go out in the field, we'll tag spikes that are at anthesis, come back 26 days later, cut the spikes, put them in a cold shock, pretty much a fridge, let them sit at these certain temperatures for 7 days, and then we can take those, we can grind up the seed, we can run a falling number. There's an enzyme assay there that's called the Fabatus amylase enzyme assay, so we can actually look at that and not only look at falling number, but also look at the actual alpha amylase activity that is going on in the kernel. So this is something, again, a very laborious and time-consuming process, which is why we really want to figure out the genetics, because it takes a lot of time and a lot of tape for people to wander through the field and actually find individual spikes right at anthesis. This is how the enzyme test works. So when you look at pre-harvest sprouting, most of the alpha amylase activity is going to be in the embryo end, whereas late maturity alpha amylase you'll see in pockets throughout the entire kernel. So when we run that enzyme test, we'll do what's called the half seed assay. We'll cut it in half. We'll look at enzyme activity in the germ end and in the brush end, and it gives us an indication of whether it was pre-harvest sprout or late maturity alpha amylase causing the problem, which again I think is going to be useful for the growers, because right now all I can tell you is this line has low falling number, but I don't know what caused it, and we really want to figure out what is causing this in the varieties. This is just some data, again, alpha amylase activity. When you see pre-harvest sprouting, you can see a lot of activity in that dark line, which is the embryo. Late maturity alpha amylase, it's more equal. And then when you have sound grain, very little amylase activity that's actually occurring. The numbers above those lines are the falling numbers associated with that grain. So the other thing we notice as a trend is pre-harvest sprouted grain is typically of a lower falling number than the late maturity alpha amylase. You see there, late maturity alpha amylase is in that mid 200, upper 200, whereas pre-harvest sprouting is down in the 100. So just a trend we often see. It's not to say a late maturity alpha amylase line can't be below 200, but just the trends that we see. This year, some interesting things that we saw. So this was the Anatone data from 2016 in the variety testing trial. And we were actually seeing both pre-harvest sprouting and late maturity alpha amylase at the same location. So again, I think our weather conditions this year were as such that when we started looking at samples, we were seeing, so it wasn't just one event. Low falling number was being caused from two different events within our same trial. Based on this half seed assay, we're thinking about 50% of the locations this year were due to late maturity alpha amylase. So those temperature fluctuations that we saw there, which again, we didn't see a lot of in previous years. It was mainly pre-harvest sprouting in previous years. These are some varieties with some locations, and whether at that location was caused by late maturity alpha amylase or pre-harvest sprout. And in some cases, we had samples at locations where we could find grains that were both late maturity alpha amylase induced and pre-harvest sprouting induced, just because the conditions were right at that. But is what this kind of leads me to remember as well, is just like yield potential, if we go through our field and, you know, we're going to start off at a certain yield and you watch that yield monitor and every 20 feet it's jumping up and down, it's going to be very similar with our falling numbers and late maturity alpha amylase and pre-harvest sprouting. You may go through and you may start at a 300 falling number, and as you get 20 feet down, it's a 320 and then drops to a 280. So that same variation in yield, we see the same variation. So as we start talking about the sampling and how sampling occurs, there's a lot of variation just within your field that we need to be aware of as well. So this is the data that you'll see coming off the website. And the point of this is looking at, so we've got two different locations here, Ritzville and St. Andrews. These are actually the WSU hard red variety testing trials in 2016. And what we see here, if we look in St. Andrews, we have Westbred Arrowhead that came down there with a 60, a really bad number. And so we're looking at that thinking, wow, you know, what's going on there? And then we bring in the Ritzville trial, and Arrowhead's up here at a 304. And now we're like, okay, is Arrowhead a variety we need to be concerned about or not be concerned about? St. Andrews, after these half-seed assays, were mainly late maturity alpha amylase. Ritzville was a combination of late maturity alpha amylase and pre-harvest sprouting. The point as we look at this is you're going to get variation also between the different locations where you're looking. So all this data can be found at this website. If you just go on a search engine and type in Stieber falling number, you'll come right here to this. You can look at this, and it has all the WSU variety testing entries starting from 2013. Not all locations were run every year because in 2014 we didn't find lots of problems across the field, so we only ran a subset of locations. You can search by variety or by location, but the key here is you need to look at multiple years and locations. So again, if you took this and you just looked at St. Andrews and looked at a variety, you may not get the full picture. So if you looked at a variety like Whetstone here, In St. Andrews, it looked good. But when you go to Ritzville, there's a potential indication of not such a high falling number. So make sure when you're using this data, don't just go to one location, just don't go to 1 year. Look at all of them. We hope to be able to add in the information soon of whether these locations were pre-harvest sprout or late maturity alpha amylase events. Because we've seen that sometimes where we'll go across. Reardon was an example. Certain varieties, they were solid on their falling number, and then when you got to Reardon, because of a rain event, everything was below 300 at that location. So my worry would be if a grower just looked at Reardon, they would say, oh, there's nothing good. Whereas having all that information of seeing a line that was solid everywhere else, but just one problem, right? So you're kind of looking at hedging your bets there and seeing how often do varieties have problems, not just it has a problem. So these are some questions that we've got. So I've tried to preempt maybe some of your questions. Questions on, do fungicides have an effect on falling number? These are data from Pullman where we know we had falling number problems from 2016. Applications with and without Quilt, absolutely no difference whether you apply a fungicide or not. So I don't think fungicides are having any effect on falling number. The question about can you improve falling number with storage? So the data we've been able to find, Andrew Ross of Oregon State did a study for 3 months, a 50-second increase at 100 degrees, no increase at 68 degrees. Bianchi Beck, who used to be at WSU, now at Wooster, Ohio, did it for 5 months of storage, 25-second increase at 73 degrees, 35-second increase at 95 degrees. If your falling number is very low, storage does not do anything. 144 a second, we've been testing this sample for 3 years and testing it every other month, and it doesn't change. So if you had a moderately low falling number, maybe in that 270 to 300 second, the data indicates that it may increase with storage at higher temperatures over about 3 to 5 months, but is what we don't know is how that actually works in a storage bin. This is a pound of grain that's sat on a shelf in a little bag. How that correlates to a 500,000 bushel silo or 100,000 bushel silo, we don't know. So in a silo situation, it may not be like these little tests here. You have to have realistic expectations. You can't put a 150 in storage for 3 months and think it's going to increase.
If you're one of those folks who likes to hear from the horse's mouth, the last three podcasts, episode 11, 12, and 13, should have brought you up to speed on the phenomenon that causes low falling numbers and the impacts and science behind it. If you've downloaded those episodes to your phone, I recommend you keep them there and listen again sometime in the future. Until next time, I'm Scott Yates, hoping you'll tune in again for another episode of Weed All About It!
You think we're simple, you think we're not right. Look at your cities and ask yourself who's right. We've got country and you've got crime. We've got green and you've got grime. Let there be no doubt, we have what it takes to till the soil until our back aches. Just give us a break and don't be so rude. We love the work and you love the food.
We feed you.